Чи скінчиться потім? And that was Taras Petronenko from Ukraine with Chernobylska Zona, the Chernobyl Zone. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на двомовну радіопередачу «Наш голос». Говорить Павліна Макварі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there, and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchik-Макварі, your host, по-українське, in Ukrainian, Павліна. I am so glad to have you with me. Whether you're listening on AM, FM, shortwave, online, or in flight, or to the podcast, welcome, вітаю. This week's show will be dedicated to the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster that occurred on April 26, 1986. So our cultural capsule with Vassil Pavlovsky, as well as news from Ukraine with Keith Perron, will focus on Chernobyl. We'll have a special Chernobyl feature courtesy Deutsche Welle and an interview with American-Ukrainian author and filmmaker Irene Zabitko about her upcoming film on Chernobyl. We'll also have the usual proverb of the week, local events on the Vancouver broadcast, messages from our sponsors, and our music will have a Chernobyl theme. So coming up next is a singer from Ukraine by the name of Nadia Kosyak, and here she is now with a song that translates as Ukrainian Beauty, Ukrainska Vroda.
Сонце вдивляється з неба, як Чорнобильська плаче земля. Радіацію зборкати треба, бо вона, як той ворон кружля. Мертва зона не зна, що робити, де і в кого пораду знайти, як себе і людей захистити від такої страшної біди. Чорнобильські дзвони кричать всьому світу, що гине земля, що не можна тут жити. Чорнобильські дзвони до неба волають, бо як рятувати цю землю, не знаю. Місто вмерло, життя тут не буде. Боже, Боже, який тільки жах. Покидали його бідні люди, і бриніла сльоза на очах. Їм казали, все скоро скінчиться, ви повернетесь знову сюди. Та Чорнобилі досі їм сниться, а літає лиш вітер туди. Чорнобильські дзвони кричать всьому світу, що гине земля, що не можна тут жити. Чорнобильські дзвони до неба волають, бо як рятувати цю землю, не знаю. Не в'є там гніздечко, не лунає там пісня і сміх. Наче сироти стали містечка, без людей нерозумних своїх. Плачуть дзвони, кричать край безодні, а на серці тривога іще. Ой ти, доленько, доле народна, що пошле тобі Боженько ще. Чорнобильські дзвони кричать всьому світу, що гине земля, що не можна тут жити. врятувати цю землю не знають.
Radiocast.ca – це наша адреса в інтернеті. Українська радіопрограма з Ванкувера «Четверта хвиля».
Ukrainian programming, the fourth wave from the Burnaby Mountain.
Ми виходимо на хвилі 91 FM в Ванкувері. Також ловіть наш потік через вебсайт cjsf.ca.
From Montreal, that was Chetamshina from their CD recorded back in 1990, The Best of Chetamshina. That was a song called Zima, or Winter. Up next, a special feature from Deutsche Welle about Chernobyl, and many thanks to Keith Perron for sourcing this and providing it to us.
The decimeter beats wildly as we pass what was the so-called Red Forest, named for the colours the trees turned in the aftermath of the Chernobyl disaster.
Yeah, outside, 11:29. Wow. 13:55. Wow.
The device registers ionising radiation levels of 1,355 roentgens per hour, many times the acceptable levels. We're safe inside our speeding van, provided we don't stop. The trees are long buried, and all that's visible are grassy mounds and railway tracks. But in 1986, a thick pine forest stood here, right in the path of the radiation cloud that followed the explosion and the fire at Chernobyl Reactor No. 4. At the time of the blast, Sergei Zaitsev was 26 years old, working with the Soviet government supply company. He was one of an estimated 200,000 so-called liquidators called in to clean up and do repairs.
On the 11th
of May, when I first arrived, I was shocked at how everything was so disorganized. At the site, they said to me, "Don't go here, don't go there." I was surprised how chaotic things were.
At first, he and his team were not aware they were being exposed to radiation particles.
I
knew something was wrong, but I didn't realize it was dangerous.
After Sergei Zaitsev's second visit 2 months later, he became sick. In the 25 years since, he's been in and out of hospital, suffering from a long list of ailments: a stomach ulcer, joint pain, heart problems, spontaneous bleeding, kidney stones, and liver issues. His first marriage broke up, and he has not been able to hold down a job. But for all of the problems, Sergei Zaitsev is grateful that he's still alive.
Out of the 10 people that were with me on the last visit, 6 are not alive anymore.
It's hard to get a handle on the total death toll from Chernobyl. Officially in Ukraine, it's about 4,500. But a comprehensive study released by leading scientists from the region last year concluded that, in fact, 1 million people had died or would die as a result of the disaster, mainly from cancer. The actual number of casualties is likely to be somewhere in between. The radiation spread across the whole of Ukraine, parts of neighbouring Belarus, as well as Russia, even parts of Europe. Today at the reactor site, all is quiet except for the sound of large machines building a new cover to replace the faulty sarcophagus which was supposed to contain the tons of radioactive material that remains inside the reactor. It has leaked on a number of occasions in recent years. The last reactor in this area was shuttered in 2000, but Dmytro Kmara from the National Ecological Centre of Ukraine worries about the ongoing effects.
Nuclear waste, apart from Chernobyl, also exists in other areas. The effect the radiation has on people is more noticeable every year. Even from Chernobyl, the dust still gets around all of Ukraine, and more importantly, it gets into the groundwater and into the Dnieper River, where 30 million Ukrainians get their water.
3,000 people still work in the Chernobyl exclusion zone in constructing the new waste storage facility or maintaining existing facilities. They rotate in and out of the zone to limit their exposure. But another 5,000 ordinary Ukrainians have chosen to move back into the 30-kilometre zone surrounding the reactor site. As the zone's chief sanitary doctor, it's the job of Alexander Tsimbalyuk to ensure the people and the environment are safe.
Fish from the Pripyat River and mushrooms, for example, and wild berries from the forest, I find very high levels of radiation contamination. Of course, such foodstuff is dangerous for people's life.
The Chernobyl reactor exploded in 1986 during a test on the electrical system. A plan was in place to deal with such a scenario, but it was not put into effect in time because the Soviet government based in Moscow tried to cover it up. Today, Ukraine has a different government and different systems and different technology. But Dr. Alexander Tsimbalyuk isn't confident that the outcome will be much different if there was another disaster at one of Ukraine's 15 existing nuclear reactors.
I think if we have a serious accident in the future, our response system could not react good and quickly.
Ukraine is dependent on nuclear technology, which generates about half of its energy needs. It has an ambitious expansion plan to add 10 more reactors in the next 10 years, and the government is spending billions to make it happen. But Ukrainians are being reminded yet again of the dangers, not just by the recent events in Japan, but by the attention that's once again focusing on Chernobyl as the 25th anniversary looms large on April the 26th. Karen Percy, Deutsche Welle, Chernobyl, Ukraine.
You're listening to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Ukrainian News Outlook.
In this special edition, we look at the health impacts 25 years after the Chernobyl nuclear disaster in Ukraine. I'm Keith Parent. On April 26, 1986, at 1:23 local Ukraine time, the world saw one of the biggest nuclear disasters of the 20th century. The Chernobyl nuclear power plant suffered a power surge, and when an emergency shutdown was attempted, a more extreme power spike occurred, which led to the reactor vessel to be ruptured in a series of explosions. As a result, a plume of highly radioactive smoke went into the atmosphere over an extensive geographic area. 350,400 people were evacuated and resettled from parts of the most severely contaminated areas of Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine. 25 years after this disaster, people continue to be affected. The World Health Organization has suggested the final death toll could reach as high as 4,000 in the next few years. The health impacts of the Chernobyl catastrophe remain a controversial subject today, and they are heavily contested despite numerous investigations. Dr. Edmund Langfeder set up the Thyroid Center at the Otto Lug Radiation Institute in Munich, Germany, which has been active to monitor the health problems that affect people in the radioactive zone. He speaks next to Nathan Wipkop.
So we are working in the area of Chernobyl since 1990. And we installed in 1993 in Gomel, which is the capital of a region in Belarus, which is close to the Chernobyl area. We installed a thyroid center. So from 1993 on, we observed in this center all thyroid diseases, including thyroid cancer, of this area of Gomel. And the area of Gomel has an area comparable to Switzerland, so it's quite large, while the population is about 1.6 million. So any person in the Oblast Gomel who had any problems with thyroid would come to our thyroid center. And therefore, we have a very good knowledge and overview of all types of thyroid diseases which occurred from 1990 on.
Perhaps we can go through some of these figures now. How many cases of thyroid cancer has your team observed in the Gomel region? And maybe break that down according to children and compare that to the background rate.
I would like to prefer to show you the figures of the 13 years before Chernobyl and the first 13 years after Chernobyl we had among our patients. So the increase in thyroid cancer in children and juveniles after Chernobyl compared to the 13 years before Chernobyl was 58-fold. And for the adults from the age of 18 upwards till the age of 65, this increase was 4- to 6-fold. So both figures are substantiated and very correct. So from this data pool, we can say that the UNSCEAR committee of the United Nations and other committees like the IAEA or WHO, if they do not accept these figures, they are playing down these effects of Chernobyl.
The UNSCEAR committee that you referred to, the UN investigation, it found around 6,000 cases of thyroid cancer observed after the accident. How did these numbers compare to the numbers that you have measured in Gomel?
I know from the UNSCEAR committee the latest report where they quote in paragraph 70 that there's nearly no substantiated evidence for an increase in thyroid cancer in adults. So this claim is definitely wrong, absolutely wrong.
According to the report that I'm looking at right now, they said that they observed 6,000 cases among people who were children or adolescents at the time of the accident, and that by 2005, only 15 cases had proved fatal. How many cases have proved fatal in your observation of thyroid cancer cases in Gomel?
So in our group, which was treated and diagnosed in our thyroid center, we had no fatal case in the time vicinity of operation and aftercare. And the reason for that is that in the Gomel Oblast, the people know that this thyroid center is on the level of a Western University clinic. And because the healthcare is free, many people came just prophylactic to have a check for their thyroid, and they came very regularly. So we could diagnose these thyroid diseases in a very early stage, and therefore the chance to save the life of the persons, of the patients, was very big.
Doesn't this kind of prove the point of the UNSCEAR committee, though, which is that in terms of lasting impacts, there have been very few actual fatalities?
Well, for me, being a medical doctor, it is not only the fatality which counts. It is the cancer as a disease which counts. And I do not accept only to look at death rates. And if you see the very big problems which is connected with a cancer disease in a person and also for the family of the person, this is really a very big burden for the patient as well as the family. And therefore, for me, it is not only the death which counts.
And that was Dr. Edmund Lagerfeder of the Thyroid Center of the Otto Lug Radiation Institute in Munich, Germany, speaking with Nathan Wibkopp. And with that, we've come to the end of this special edition of the program. I'm Keith Perron.
Joining me now on Skype is Ukrainian-American author and now filmmaker Irene Zabitko of Apopka, Florida. I first met Irene when she visited Vancouver about 6 years ago now. She was attending an academic writing conference for which she'd organized a panel discussion of Ukrainian writers. Since then, she made the switch from writer to filmmaker and is currently working on a documentary film about Chernobyl. Irene has kindly agreed to come on to Nash Holos to talk about her project. So thanks so much for agreeing to speak with us, Irene.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Paulette, for inviting me.
Now, this film is actually the second one that you're doing on Chernobyl, correct?
It's the second one, yes, but the first one is based on the second one, if that makes any sense.
No. You have to explain.
Okay, the first film is actually a film short called Epiphany at Chernobyl, and what we did, we took some footage from the bigger project, which is a one-hour documentary called Life in the Dead Zone. And what we had a lot of good footage, and we wanted to sort of get the word out there before the bigger film was completed. So we did a film short, and a standalone film short called Epiphany at Chernobyl, which won an award at a film festival. This came out in 2008, and we do show it around. We haven't released it on YouTube yet because a lot of people are still asking to see it in film festivals, and places that are commemorating Chernobyl in one way or another, so we're keeping that for a little bit. But at some point, we will launch it on YouTube and make it available to everybody.
Is it available for purchase?
Oh, that's such a nice question. No. But if anybody does want a copy, I'd be happy to send a copy, especially if they want to show it at schools or talk about Chernobyl in their book clubs or film clubs or discussion groups or whatever. And if they want to make a donation, all proceeds will go to the film.
Okay, so what this is, and you've been working on this film for a long time, and you just took some excerpts out, which is sort of as almost a trailer, more than a trailer, but that sort of effect.
Correct, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, so Chernobyl happened 25 years ago, and you've been working on this for quite a while, because you were talking about this when we met in Vancouver back in 2005, and you had already written a novel about Chernobyl. So you had a long time interest. What got you started? Why did you become so interested and involved in what's going on now, the aftermath of Chernobyl?
Well, it's an ongoing problem. Since I wrote the novel came out in 2000, and I was just fascinated by the people, true story, of people who returned to their irradiated and abandoned village in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, also known as the Dead Zone.
Okay.
And that's what the novel's about, life in the dead zone. I'm sorry. No,
the Sky Unwashed.
Yeah, thank you.
that came out in 2000. When did you start writing it?
Oh, I wrote it several years before, probably about 3 to 4 years before, piecemeal.
Why? What prompted, first of all?
Because I read an article in the Ukrainian Weekly about Ukrainian Women's Organization, who actually found the women living in the irradiated villages around the Chernobyl exclusion zone, and that was fascinating to me. And you know, there are a lot of statistics out there about, you know, the Chernobyl aftermath and the liquidators who first came into, you know, to stop the fires and the evacuation and things like that. But I really wanted to know about these people that came back, and why did they come back to the most horrific place on the planet, the most contaminated, radiated place in the world. And so I wrote a short story which grew into the novel, which became The Sky Unwashed. And since then, whenever I go somewhere with the book, or you know, for a presentation or a book tour, people always ask, have you ever been to Chernobyl? And I always had to say no until now. So I've been approached by various filmmakers to do a movie version of The Sky Unwashed.
Wow.
But that's still kind of in the works, and maybe I'll talk about that another time with you. But right now, I was more interested in the documentary approach, because I did want to see the women that I wrote about in the novel. Was my fictional version absolutely correct or not? And so in 2007, we were able to get some seed money, and a filmmaker and I, Peter Mihosevich, and I went to the zone for the first time to actually meet the women in a village called Opachichi, which is actually the village that my novel is based on.
Mm-hmm.
So I did meet some women, we did some filming, and then the rest of the year, of course, is fundraising, because that's how you do it in the States.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you get a lot of grants or anything, especially in these hard economic times.
Right.
So we returned in 2008, and then we returned in 2010, and we were able to bring a film crew in 2010. We have a really good trailer on our website from 2010 as well. And the reason why is because the Ukrainian National Women's Associate League of America gave us a big grant. So we were able to bring a real film crew in addition to Peter and myself and buy equipment and do some high-tech things, which we weren't able to do before.
Wow. So 2008 was like a fact-finding mission, and 2010 was serious filming.
Serious filming, although we did some serious filming in 2008, you know, kind of guerrilla filming, which is why we got the Epiphany at Chernobyl short. Yeah, and then 2007 was the first trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some film from there as well. There was footage from there as well, which is pretty good, I think. So, but we still have to go back. We're not done.
Mm-hmm. So you were actually in the zone.
Yes.
And so you were in that irradiated area.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
Okay, so has that affected your health at all?
I'm great. I feel fine. I am, you know, I'm like the women in the zone. Denial is really good. I don't think about
Irene,
it. Oh, no. But you know what happens? You don't really know anyway until 20 years from now, if then. And
right.
We do take precautions. We do take iodine tablets, and we are checked out. And, you know, when you're in the zone, you just can't leave once you're in there. You know, it is like a little country. You have to have a passport to go in. It's like it's a checkpoint. You have to get permission to go to the Chernobyl zone. And then when you leave, you can't leave. They make you go through this sort of Soviet container, for lack of a better word, where you place your hand on a meter, and then it will radiate, or not radiate. No, we don't want the radiation. It'll let you know whether you're chisted, which means, of course, clean, or nichisted, not clean, meaning how much radiation you have. And radiation levels are always checked with a dosimeter, too.
Wow.
So we're okay. I think we're fine. And we usually go in the winter when the radiation levels are much, much lower than they would be in other seasons.
Why would that be?
Because the snow tampers down a lot of the radionuclides, yeah.
So it kind of creates a block then.
It does, yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's the best time to go if you're going to go.
Wow. So obviously you're very pragmatic about this, and you're just going to do this, you know, and health effects be damned. And that is, I'm just absolutely astounded. I mean, I can't, it's amazing that, you know, you care so much about these people and about this story and letting the rest of the world know about it.
Right. And I think it's more important than ever because of what happened and is still happening in Japan. The poor people are having this horrific, horrific consequence because of the tsunami and earthquake. And now they have a radiation meltdown, really. And, of course, now Chernobyl is in the news a lot because it's being compared to it and is probably as dangerous, if not more so, than what the Chernobyl meltdown was.
Yeah.
So that's why another reason why we feel compelled to continue and finish the film, because of what people are paying more attention now. And some of the nuclear reactors that were going to be built are being reconsidered, especially in the States. So that's probably a good thing.
What are some of the challenges that you encountered? I mean, you mentioned that it's a restricted area. So, you know, what were the any other challenges that you encountered there, like with getting permission to get into the zone?
It's really not that hard if you have a good contact. You have to have a nice Ukrainian businessman to help out with these things. And we have a great guy who does all the paperwork and makes sure that once we are at the checkpoint, we are able to go through. We have a hired car that takes us as opposed to a bus or something. Now they're doing eco tours there, so that's a whole other ball game. But we are able, and we have accessibility to the villages that we want to explore, and that's good. The last time, though, 2010, we were in the middle of an ice storm, and the roads were so treacherous. I mean, in Ukraine, they don't plow anyway, certainly, but boy, out there in the villages, it was horrific. I mean, we could not get through, so we didn't see the women that were waiting for us. We couldn't get through to them. We did go to the nuclear power plant, but we didn't see the actual women, and we were told there were wolves around. We saw wolf hoofs, you know, wolf prints and things. Yeah, that was scary. So we decided, and then the electricity died out in our hotel. There was a hotel in the town of Chernobyl, which is not the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. There's a little town, I think it's about a few miles away from the actual site, the nuclear power plant. But anyway, that's where the hotel is. That's where the foreigners stay overnight, nice Soviet little hotel. and the electricity went out, so they asked us, would you mind leaving? And then we were afraid we wouldn't be able to get back to Kiev because the roads were so incredibly icy. So that was a huge challenge for us. So needless to say, the next time we are going to go, probably in the summer.
So when will the film be released then? It's called Life in the Dead Zone. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
And when do you expect it to be released?
We would like to have everything done, I'm going to say 2012.
Wow.
And and I have a suspicion that radiation and its dangers will still be prevalent in 2012, unfortunately.
It'll still be pretty timely then. So in the meantime, though, you've got lots of work to do. That's a year away. So you'll be needing some help in the form of funding.
Yes.
And that's why we're on the air. It's great to help the people in Japan. And this is a way to help them as well, because they'll be learning from your films. So it's a worthy cause as well. So how would people help out that way, Irene?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, www.lifeinthedeadzone.com, and they can make a direct donation. We have a PayPal account now, so that's a safe way to do it. They can also write to us at Wheat Street Productions, and the address is all on the website as well.
Okay, so and that is lifeinthedeadzone.com?
Correct, and they can also see our latest trailer and our past trailers, and including that lovely ice storm we were involved in, on our website right now. So I hope that people do come and visit us. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook now, like the world is, so I guess we're joining the world in that way.
All right. So looking forward to seeing you in Facebook and on Twitter, and you have a newsletter as well people can sign up for updates.
Correct, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on, telling us about this.
Thank you, Paulette. Thank you. And I hope that we do have a Vancouver premiere.
I hope so, too, definitely. And on the Vancouver Island, too.
Okay, I'm there.
Awesome. Okay, thanks again, Irene. All the best to you
in
completing this project. Thanks.
Thank you, Paulette. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Hello, I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this is Cultural Capsule, especially for Nash Holos. While it happened over 30 years ago, the recent events in Japan has, amongst some of my acquaintances, prompted questions about the Chernobyl nuclear disaster and what the situation is like in the zone. In 2002, I traveled to Chernobyl as part of a mission with the UN's Undersecretary for Humanitarian Affairs and its Coordinator of International Cooperation on Chernobyl, Kenzo Oshima. Oshima himself is a survivor of the bombing of Hiroshima, and his visit to Ukraine was a follow-up of a UN report that was released in February of 2002 entitled Human Consequences of the Chernobyl Nuclear Accident. I recall when he addressed the workers inside the zone. I could see that his personal experience touched many of those present, as he could relate to them as a survivor of radiation, an unseen killer. It are those human consequences of the catastrophe which were often neglected and often overlooked by the Soviets and the subsequent Ukrainian governments. On last year's Cultural Capsule, I recalled how a friend of mine watched Chernobyl burn with her brother and sister from their family apartment in Prepyat. For her and her family members, the months and years which followed are probably impossible for us to imagine. She told me more than once of the discrimination which she and her siblings faced from their peers, and even teachers, as those who had been relocated from the zone. I heard it personally from her and her older sister many times, of the difficulties they faced in collecting the benefits that they had been promised, and while they don't bother anymore, their mother still jumps through all the hoops necessary to collect a pittance. Last year, I enumerated a number of classical artists whose music related to the Chernobyl catastrophe, but there are also contemporary artists who borrowed from this tragedy. Taras Petrenenko's Chernobylska Zona, Kim Soense's Pisnya pro Chuhaystra, a mythological forest man who now lives alone in the zone, and Nadia Kusiak's Chernobylski Dzwone. From that last song, the most befitting simple words probably echo in the heads of many Chernobyl survivors. They told them, and I quote, "It will quickly be over, and you will once again return here. And Chernobyl to this day is in their dreams, and it's only the wind that flies that way." Maybe the greatest catastrophe of Chernobyl was not the technical nor the biological, but the human suffering. I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and let's not only remember those who perished both directly and indirectly as a result of Chernobyl, but those who for the last 30 years have had to live a nightmare.
The world was changed for good that day, and we were just an element, the victims of an accident or nuclear experiment. Our occupiers played a god that none of them believed in, and gave us all the devil, but no choice, we had to breed him. The hammer banged, raised fallout dust, the sickle of uranium. Poisoned lands and rivers, Belarusian and Ukrainian. These symbols now mean more than ideology that failed. They spell the Soviet sin that to this very day prevails. Chernobyl, there was a time when you could breathe. Chernobyl, you also had a history. Chernobyl, born in 1193.
Chernobyl, did scripture say it was to be? Their sickness lives in old and young, in children also blameless. A parting gift from a regime whose second name was shameless. There's something I can't understand, this crime was so severe. Yet he who tried to hide it is a man now most revered. The sheep from Wales and Norway then got too sick to ignore. It seems for world opinion that their illness counted more than all the wrongs the Red Star brought to many eastern nations. Yet somehow it's still cool for some to guard its reputation. Chernobyl, there was a time when you could breathe. Chernobyl, you also had a history. Chernobyl, born in 1193. Chernobyl, did scripture say it was to be? They read deluded diatribe by so-called expert thinkers in cafe bars in Islington, then preach to normal drinkers. A blind eye to the crimes of one, but we're all taught the other. Swastika, hammer, sickle, had the same bitch for a mother. Try Molotov and Ribbentrop in 1939. They planned to share out Europe, that was once upon a time. But 25 years ago was born Forbidden Zone. It's still today for some poor souls a poisoned place called home. Chernobyl, there was a time when you could breathe. Chernobyl, you also had a history. Chernobyl, born in 1193. Chernobyl, did scripture say it was to be?
An original composition recently released by Stepan Pasichnik of London, England, in both Ukrainian and English. You can find both versions of the song at his website at the-ukes.com. You're listening to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver, online at am1320.com. The internationally syndicated edition airs the following weekend on the PCJ Radio Network on shortwave, AM, and FM at pcjmedia.com. The podcast for the Vancouver edition can be found at the Nash Holos website, which is nashholos.com, and the international PCJ Radio edition at pcjmedia.com. Both editions are also available on iTunes. На жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму. Вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Держава податків вимагає не лише від живих, а й від мертвих. And our proverb of the week translates as the state demands taxes not only from the living but also from the dead. And that's very apropos on the eve of another election day here in Canada. Well, our time is about up, so to wrap up our program, another song courtesy Vasil Pavlovsky, and it is by a group called Tin Sonsia. It's called Pisnya pro Chuhaistra, and that is a mythical forest character. And, of course, the song has symbolic overtones relating to Chernobyl and the lingering after effects still devastating the Ukrainian people. I'm Paulette Demchik-Macquarie. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks so much for listening. Till next time, do побачення.
Хащах, де не тліє цвіт болота, де лягла батія, Чорно-золота кіннота часом в білій свиті. Зачарований гуляє лісовик чугайстер і стиха промовляє, якщо можеш, завітай до мене ти, якщо хочеш, спи моєї води, якщо віриш, розкажи мені, про що ти мрієш, коли живеш на самоті. Ти мрієш, коли живеш на